This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
The pitch, a swing, and a fly ball, short right field. That is going to drop, and a Redbird winner. The ball falls in front of Benj, and the Cardinals walk it off. The first RBI of the season for Mason Wynn, a looper that found the grass in right field, and they light it up in downtown St. Louis.
There you go. Good start for the Cardinals as they have won the first two games or first two series of their season by taking 2 of 3 against the Tampa Bay Rays, and they did so against the New York Mets. Finishing up yesterday, off day today, and they will be back at it tomorrow afternoon in Detroit. It'll be a 12:10 first pitch, so you're going to have to start your day early tomorrow. A noon game, just after noon game for the Cardinals. It is the Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji. You know how to join the show. Watch on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter at KMOX Sports. And you can also send us text messages, 314-436-7900. Bernie, this is a look. We know what the season is. We know what the expectation is, the transition the Cardinals are in the middle of right now, both in the front office and with the roster and at the minor league level. But it is still nice to open up the season with a couple of series victories.
Yeah, absolutely, Ron. It's good to be with you. You know, the Cardinals, I don't want to minimize the fact that they opened the season at home with two series and they won both series. I don't want to minimize it because a Cardinals team hadn't done that since 2008. And, you know, so it's not like there's a you know, regular history
right
of this. And then, you know, before that, it was 2000. So that was actually kind of rare what they did. And listen, going into the season, Tampa Bay was considered, still is considered a playoff contender. We know that the Mets are. And what I liked about it, other than the fact they won two series and they got off to a 4-2 start, what I liked about it is they won each of those series in a radically, dramatically different way. Like, for example, against the Rays, the two teams combined scored 45 runs. In other words, they averaged combined 15 runs a game. So the Cardinals won a slugfest. They won a high scoring affair. They won a last man that gets a hit wins type of series where it was just like constant bombardment of runs. They won that series. Then the Mets come to town with an excellent pitching staff and a $300 million payroll. And those two teams in the three games combined for 12 runs. They combined for an average of 4 runs per game, the two of them. So that was the quintessential grind it out. Don't make a mistake. If you don't make a play, it could cost you the game. Boy, if you swing your pitches off the plate, you don't draw a walk, that could cost you the game. Anything could cost you the game, is so close. So they won that series too. They won a high scoring series. They won a low scoring series. The bullpen was awful in the first series. You know, 15 earned runs, 13 innings. And, you know, universally, people are just like, oh, my gosh, this bullpen's horrible. What are they going to do? Sky is falling. Mets come into town. The same guys in the bullpen, 13 innings, no runs allowed against the Mets. So the Cardinals, I think, are going to be full of surprises this season. Like, in other words, just when we think we may have figured something out, oh, yeah, okay, that's how they're going to be. It's like, no. A young team that's very hungry and very bullheaded about winning. I just don't jump to conclusions about them because I think that's one of the things I like about them. Don't jump to conclusions. They're going to try to define themselves and create an identity, and it's actually pretty cool to see this in progress.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be – the way I'll watch the Cardinals this year, I'll be moving goalposts regularly. I'll have a couple of different ways to look at them. There's going to be the day-to-day, you know, the game-to-game where I am concerning myself with, oh, who's pitching in this inning? What bullpen move are they going to make? Who's batting fourth tonight? You know, why are they doing this? This looks like, hey, the pen's starting to shape up to look really nicely. But then I'll also look at it from the perspective of, well, this is all long term. The only thing that matters is the long term. What matters is what they find out for next year and the year after that. What solutions do they find throughout this season so that they have one less thing to worry about as they put the roster together next year or the year after that and so on and so forth, which is why we spend so much time talking about Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman and wondering if those two guys are viable future options. You know, so I'm looking at it a couple of different ways. Sure. On the game to game, yeah, I want them to win because I want to watch good, fun baseball, winning baseball. But on the other end, I know what this is about. This is about getting them ready to really compete a year or two or three from now.
Absolutely. And I'm with you. There is a global view of this, for lack of a better term. And it is about the player development and who's going to define themselves this season in a way that the Cardinals and Heim Bloom can maybe make a decision about, well, this guy belongs. He's with us on the train going forward, or there's going to be some guys that are going to be basically told to leave the train, you know, after 2026. So there's a lot at stake that way. But I also think that figures into the kind of team it will be in terms of its personality, identity, attitude. When you have a team that where everybody on that team, but just about, or most high percentage of guys on that team know that they have a lot at stake. They have a lot to prove, a whole lot to prove, some of them. And it really could redefine their careers. I mean, there's a lot at stake. That only makes that team more fired up. It only makes them hungrier. It only makes them really appealing. Because they play with a desperation that I haven't seen around here for a while. I mean, you know, those Tampa Bay games, those comebacks all the time, getting up off the deck, fighting back, playing the Mets. You know, you lose the first game, and the Mets had three great starting pitchers lined up, and they were tough to deal with. And the Cardinals, needless to say, you know, could have lost all three games, but they just kept grinding and grinding and grinding. And they out-executed the Mets. They really did. They were fundamentally better. They were defensively better. They didn't make the mistakes that we saw, like a Francisco Lindor, a $340 million player make. And that's how they won two close games in that series. You know, so I think that all of this is related, this desire to prove themselves, also to prove critics wrong. Gordon Graceffo said that yesterday. Mason Wynn hinted at that yesterday, which is like, hey, we're better than people think. People already wrote us off. We think we're a lot better than that. We'll find out. I mean, good on them for believing that, because it makes it only more interesting to watch how they go about it.
It is interesting, even though, you know, it's still very early. And I know we still have to do that caveat every time we talk about
At some point we got to stop with this.
I guess. I mean, I think.
Me too. I do it too.
Yeah, shouldn't we? Should we just give baseball fans the benefit of the doubt to know that we know it's only six games in?
Yeah,
we get that. But
that's what's funny about it, because we think like it actually disrespects the fans. If you ask me, we're not trying to.
Well, no, because you know
we're basically saying, in a way, we're saying like, well, I got to say it's early and it's a small sample because people are stupid.
Well,
no, they're not.
Well,
they know that.
We're talking to the 10% of people who who do text in and write comments and say, guys, slow down. It's six games. Like, yeah, we know that. We know that you know that. And we know that you know that we know that, too. So I guess that's the caveat to this one. And you know, payroll is an interesting conversation, Bernie, because the Mets spend a considerable amount of money. And I mean, they have the second highest payroll in the game. Only the Dodgers spend more. And that's just the way they operate. And I don't have a problem with that. And hell, it'd be awesome if the Cardinals were spending $360 on payroll. You know, I realize what the constraints actually are. And for this season, they've got one of the lowest payrolls in baseball. I mean, they're a bottom, seven or eight team in the game. But that's for what they are trying to accomplish right now. I have no problem with that. And I don't know that many people probably do.
that is one thing I can say 100%, and I'll say it every day 100%. I don't care one iota what their payroll is, because it's just completely irrelevant to their the mission that they are on right now, which is a rebuild. I don't care. There will be a time and a place and a situation where they're going to have to spend more money. And I think they'll be obligated to spend more money. And if they don't raise the payroll in a way that gets them a couple of missing pieces to where they can be a playoff team and they can make a run, I'll be the first guy complaining about it. But right now, their payroll could be 29 cents. I wouldn't care. It just doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, can I throw this in really quick?
Yeah.
To me, this tells you the real payroll. And what do you mean? But what do you mean, Miklas, by real payroll? I'm talking about what they are paying the 26 players who are in uniform this year. It doesn't include the money they sent away to Boston for the trades and the Arizona for the Arenado trade. It doesn't include deferred money. It doesn't include all that counts is what they're paying their guys right now. You know what they're paying their guys for 2026? $48 million.
Yep.
And only the Nationals have a smaller payroll. It's called an active cash payroll. Only the Nationals have a smaller one by about less than $1 million. So that's what's kind of cool about. No, I like knowing that part, because by knowing that part, it makes it more fun to watch these guys play their tails off and win games.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
There's a huge value to it, too, especially because this is a very young team. This is an amazingly young team. And because of that, they can learn how to win. You know, they can learn how to go through losing. And these are all going to be valuable lessons for them. And does it concern you at all, or do you wish they had a little bit more veteran presence on the team, or do you think it matters?
No. I think it's actually good for them not to have that, because the so-called veteran leadership they had wasn't very effective.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And people say, well, how could you say that? I can say that because the first baseman and the third baseman at the time went to management and said, we have too many young guys in here. You need to get more old guys in here to help lead. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Here's two guys that might be in the Hall of Fame, should be in the Hall of Fame, and they're making great, great sums of money. And yet they kind of want to dish off the leadership responsibility to Brandon Crawford and Matt Carpenter. So Heim Bloom and Ali Marmol are 100% correct. And I have been 100% in agreement, which is they want this team to take ownership of the team. The young players who are going to define who the Cardinals are going to be over the next 2 or 3, 4 years, it's up to them to set the culture and to just form that cohesion or that chemistry in a clubhouse. That's a big responsibility for them. But why wouldn't you want them to do that? Why do you want to bring in an outsider to do that? I don't understand that. I don't understand the logic behind that. I love that they're going to the young guys and say, it's your team, your time, lead us. You do it. Love it.
Learn on the fly. I have no problem with that either. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, Gashouse Gang is sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, the overhead door company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Now, is it unconventional to have someone like Mason Forth? Absolutely. Do I think if he has the right approach, his ability to make contact, stay out of hitting into double plays, and being able to drive in some runs makes sense? I do. It's honestly not that big a deal to me. I know it's a conversation, but yeah.
That is Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol on the Gashouse Gang this week. He is with us every Tuesday on this show at 12 o'clock, and we talk to him for a good 30, 40 minutes every time he's on the show. He's always insightful and talking about Mason Wynn, who has been serving as the cleanup hitter for the Cardinals so far this season, batting fourth. And for somebody whose OPS is in the 460 range. It's not the typical traditional way that you look at the cleanup position, Bernie, but that was a question that you asked of him. You know, what's the thought process? What goes into this? And he did talk about the lefty-righty, didn't want two left-handers going head-to-head for bullpen matchup purposes later in the game, which does make sense. But was that an answer you were satisfied with?
Yeah, but it is. But I come from a little bit of a different place on this. And this sort of goes back to what you said so insightfully near the top of the show, which is this is a kind of season where I have changed my view in terms of what I will get ticked off about or complain about or find offensive or bothersome or whatever. Because it isn't about like every single game. It isn't about you got to maximize your lineup like every single game. You can't experiment. You can't try different things. You can't see how a guy looks batting in this spot or another guy looks batting that spot. This is the type of situation that invites trying things out. So that's my side of it. The second thing is that I just want to see Mason Winn hit. I think too many people are missing that part. In other words, I'm not hung up on where he's batting. I just want to see him hit because he didn't hit well last year and he's not hitting well this year. He would be the first to tell you that he's capable of doing so much more offensively. And if for the Cardinals, who Mason Winn's going to be around here a long time, for him to be the player that just checks every single box, he would be an above average offensive player. I just want to see him hit. You can bat him wherever you want. But the other thing is that I do think Ollie Marmol, and he indicated that in our conversation Tuesday, I think Ollie Marmol, you know, eventually will get around to making a change there if he continues to struggle. But also, he's waiting to see, and correctly so, whether Jordan Walker is, in fact, turned the corner and now has got the confidence to handle the pressure of batting leadoff. And Jordan Walker's not ready for that just yet. I mean, he had a bit of a relapse in the Mets series. So if you want a right-handed bat, I know some people say, well, you can put Ivan Herrera there. Yeah, you can. But I kind of like Herrera bat in second. I like that danger in the two hole. I believe the top two spots in your lineup are the most important. That's just my
opinion. No question. And that's the more modern way of looking at the batting order. It used to be you put your best hitter third, you know, guy with the most home runs bats fourth. And that's not necessarily how the metrics say you should do it. And I know there are people out there who just are tired of hearing about metrics and, you know, what the analytics say, but to have your best hitter hitting second, that's almost what every team does now. I mean, it's very common.
So
Ivan Herrera, he's your best hitter, or you think he's going to be for the full season, then you leave him in the second spot. So to that end, and to what Ollie said about Walker liking what he had seen from him, and this was through Tuesday, so just let him flourish where he is. Let him spend some time, get comfortable at any spot in the order. And if he starts to have success where you can't ignore it anymore and you want to move him up in the lineup, then go ahead and do that. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable way to handle that.
And who knows, Chris? I mean, later this season, you could have a Joshua Baez up here.
Sure.
And gosh, they're in love with him, but they also don't want to rush him. But that's a guy who projects as a middle of the lineup right-handed hitter. And it'll be sooner than later. So this is just a transitional type thing. Sorry. We're not looking at Mason Winn as like any kind of permanent cleanup hitter. I mean, this is when we do point out, yeah, he's doing terribly. No one's trying to gloss over that. But they've also played six games and they've won four of them. So it's not exactly kind of an Armageddon event, him batting fourth.
No, and especially because this is a let's find out kind of year about players.
Yeah.
It's not like it's dire where they have to make a change right now. And Matt is watching the show on YouTube.
Hey,
you can
Matt.
Do that. YouTube is
Matt's
asking.
Great.
Matt is very good, and he's asking if Mason is all right. And what he's referring to is the car accident yesterday after the game. Highway 64 was wet, and it was a single car accident. Mason was taken to the hospital, seemed to be precautionary. Well, he has posted on social media this afternoon, and this is what he says. He has a picture of the car, which is totaled, and the front of it is pretty heavily damaged. And he says, "For everyone wondering, I'm feeling great. Car is a little banged up, but nothing that can't be replaced. Big thanks to our security team and first responders for taking care of me. See y'all on the field soon." So my assumption is he will be good to play tomorrow unless they just want to be careful with him. So,
boy, that's great to know, because that's a scary thing. That's a very scary thing.
Oh, Bernie, when you're scrolling through Twitter and you kind of see, you sort of see a headline, but you're not seeing all the words at once. And I see Mason Wynn car accident, and I went, oh, God, because we have obviously a pretty bad history with Cardinals players and car accidents. So it just my heart sank in that moment. But I'm very happy that that's all that happened, because it could have been a whole lot worse.
He's such a good guy. He's such a valuable Cardinal, too. He's so important to what they do. Not only a Gold Glove shortstop, but just from a leadership standpoint, this guy just believes in the right things. Yeah. And, real quick, Chris, get back to the cleanup thing, only because of what he said after the game. Whenever he's asked about it, he said it again yesterday. He said, "Hey, man, 1 through 9, wherever Ollie wants to put me, put 1 through 9, just put me in a line. I don't care where I hit." I mean, there's no ego with him whatsoever, other than the belief that he'll eventually, in terms of hitting, he'll eventually get this thing going. He does have confidence, but there's no attitude or ego or selfishness in him whatsoever.
Bernie Nicklaus on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
The 2-0 pitch, a swing, and there's a high fly ball right center field. Walker waits for it. He's there. He has it. Graceffo works some magic, and oh, is he pumped as he comes off the field, leaving the bases loaded.
Cardinals baseball is fully underway. We are approaching our first road trip of the season. That'll be getting started in Detroit tomorrow afternoon. We will have the broadcast starting at 11:15 here on KMOX. 12:10 will be the first pitch from Comerica Park. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. And it is time to bring in one of our old friends, Will Leach, who also happens to be a podcast partner of Bernie Miklas here. Will, lifelong Cardinals fan, author, writer. He's fantastic, and he's with us now. Contributes for MLB.com, and man, he's everywhere. What's going on, Will?
But thanks for having me. I have to say I'm delighted. Chaim Bloom did warn us that the rebuild process would be long and arduous, but I'm very pleased in the first week that now that it's over and we've made it and it's time to now go win World Series. He did let us know it was going to take a while, and it did. It was a run when they were down 7-1 on opening day. I was very concerned, but we got through it, and now it's time to win that 12th championship.
Well, before I bust your chops by pointing out how this incredible, passionate, ever faithful, always loyal Illinois fan will not be at the Final Four. But we're going to put that on. He's bailing out on the Fighting Illini. He's bailing out. And so it might be unforgivable, but you're still my friend. But
I'll tell you, Bernie, real quick, I'll tell you what I tell him, what I told you, is that if you're an Illinois fan, you can't plan for the assumption that they'll be in the Final Four. Otherwise, they'll never be in. So yeah. you have to go plan a vacation instead, like Will did.
It has been a fun subplot of this season, by the way, to watch this Illini team and be like, every time they'd have a tough loss, I'd be like, okay, I'm upset, but at least my vacation is safe now, which I planned 11 months ago. So, it's been 21 years. It felt the 1 year that I picked a big vacation, but I've learned how to use a VPN. I'll be able to watch it overseas in time to watch it. And I have texting rates. I can still talk to all my family. And if I showed up, they'd probably lose anyway. So I'll just watch it from afar.
Chris Ranji, I got to tell you this, and I'll share this with all of our listeners and viewers. Will and I were, after we did Seeing Red, we were talking about this. We're talking about it during Seeing Red at the end. And my friend Will Leach was absolutely freaking out because he's like, well, how am I going to watch this? How am I going to watch this? I'm going to be on an island. How am I going to? And I'm thinking, like, you know, have you turned into your father? Which is not a bad thing because Brian Leach is a great, great man. But I've always thought Will Leach, I look at him and, you know, he's hip. He's modern. He can handle anything anything technology. He's always at the forefront of whatever's new. He's freaking out because he actually thinks he's not going to be able to, like, get to a TV or a tablet where he can watch the Illini on Saturday.
It's a very big game. The YouTube TV has firm rules about being overseas. I'm very nervous for him. I got to make this happen. Anyway.
Hey, do what you do. Great. Whatever you have to do to rip it, and they're not going to come after you. Don't worry about that. So, good luck to your Illini. They will play on Saturday in the Final Four, and we're all going to be watching closely. Hey, your Illini, my Illinois State in the NIT Final Four.
Yeah,
so, how about that? Right?
Absolutely.
All right. So, this Cardinals team, man, like we said, off to a really fun start so far, and Bernie and I were talking about, you know, altering your expectations and how we looked at the season going in and looking at it from two different lenses where you want them to win, but also you know what the deal is. You know they're in a transition. How are you watching the Cardinals this year?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it almost all as found money. You know, I think you almost have to. To me, you know, it's funny. There was a lot of talk about the Nelson Velasquez. You know, we thought he would be the opening day left fielder. And Bloom was very clear from the beginning, and so we really shouldn't have been surprised by that move, because he said, listen, any single time where I have to think about what's good for us in the short term or what's good for us in the long term, I'm going to pick the long term, to the point where he was willing to put Velasquez in the minor leagues despite his hot spring because he did not want to lose anyone off the 40-man. That is the macro thing, and I understand that, and I agree with that. I think it's the right way to do it. That doesn't change the fact that when I am watching the actual games, it is more fun when they win rather than when they lose. And I think yesterday was kind of a good example of that. I don't think anyone would look at the way the Cardinals played yesterday and be like, wow, that's a juggernaut right there. Like, that's a team that's ready to win the NL Central. But they just keep finding little ways. And I think this has been something that, frankly, you know, through kind of the difficulty of the last few years, I think it's been lost a little bit that the Cardinals have had better records than maybe the way that we talk about them sometimes act as if they do. There was a 1 year in 23 after Pujols left, which is really, really rough. But otherwise, like, they won 78 games last year. They were a little bit better the year before. They tend to find ways to, like, win little games. I think we can talk about whether this is Marmol or whether this is something within the organization. They tend to be a little bit better than maybe the talent is on hand. And I think that's been one of, and that's, frankly, can be fun teams to cheer for. And I think that's been something that's really been fun so far. I'm not getting over my skis about this. I'm glad to see them. I'd rather see them win than see them lose. I still, however, I'm not ready yet. I don't think, clearly, the organization is not ready, I think wisely, to start going, okay, well, how are we supplementing this team to make the NL Central ride? To me, that's kind of the fun of this team, particularly when it comes to the lineup. Like, a large part of the lineup this year is, okay, but the bullpen is a constantly shifting thing, and I think the rotation is going to shift. The lineup in many ways is, all right, you guys are all young, you got rope, let's see what to do this year. And that to me is actually pretty exciting to watch, not just in the short term, but for the long term part of the team. So I think there's a lot to be excited about, even if maybe they don't win every series.
Yeah, and Will Leach with us from MLB.com, and he's basically, in addition to everything else he does in terms of MLB.com, he is writing specific Cardinals columns once a week, and so that's a real pleasure to read for Cardinals fans everywhere. I wanted to throw that out there. Well, I wanted to ask you this. It's a situation. And by the way, I want to thank Nelson Velasquez after I, like, vociferously criticized the Cardinals for sending him down. I want to thank him for going 0-for-15 and striking out six times. Thanks. Thanks, big guy. Yes. Anyway.
And Nathan Church has made several catches in left field that were game-saving catches that Nelson Velasquez absolutely does not catch. But, yes.
Hey, I'm going to get back to Ranji's question. I'm going to, like, forward it to you, like, in a kind of another tentacle of it, which is I think you and I both agreed to this. We were talking about it on the podcast that I don't see this as a horrendous team. I don't see this as, like, a 95 loss team or 100 loss team. I think of that team in 2023 that lost 91 games, and I look at this roster and the potential of the players. I'm like, well, this is a better team than that team was. I just don't know what the upside is. But I don't think this is like some of these teams in the last 10, 15 years that have rebuilt where it's pain and suffering and 100 lost seasons. I do think, relatively speaking, this could be, relatively speaking, a shorter rebuild than maybe we thought.
You know, I think so. It's worth noting, you know, that when you see these rebuilds, like the Astros lost like 100 plus games four straight years. The White Sox, their fans are like, hey, we really improved last year, and they lost 103 games. So like the idea that that they did improve last year, I think that speaks to how far they'd fallen. I agree with you. This does not look like that sort of roster to me. But it also doesn't seem like a roster that has been jiggered somewhat or like put together to try to win games now. It's really kind of the perfect way to look at it, right? The idea that like everything about, particularly when it comes to the lineup, everything about this team is built to answer questions now and in the future. When it comes to my piece for MLB.com today, basically looked at, or something we talked about in the podcast this week, Bernie, was looked at everyone in the Cardinals lineup this year, all of whom was only two over 20, the age of 26. In the starting lineup, and looked at them and said, are they going to have above average offensive seasons this year? And what does that mean for them moving forward? And the reason you can say that is because it kind of looks, with the possible exception of Church, because we'll see what happens with when Newbar comes back. It looks like all of these guys are going to be in the lineup all year. And so that to be able to watch a team like that, certainly some guys are, you want to see a lot of movement for some guys. You'd like to see Victor Scott hit a little better. He's off to an okay start, though. He's really kind of had all kind of bunt singles. You'd like to see Wynn improve. You want to see these guys improve and see what they can establish themselves as. But the bar for these guys, these are not just guys like lower tier prospects that were just tossed on the roster just to like get this season over with. They actually are people that, if they can establish themselves now, can be a part of that next great Cardinals team. And I think that's what makes this more interesting than I think a lot of these other rebuilds, however you want to call them. A lot of the other rebuilds, it's just, we're just ripping everything out to the studs, and we're going to, and they almost, it can feel like tanking. Tanking doesn't really, it's more of an NBA thing than baseball thing, but it can feel that way with some of these teams. It doesn't feel that way with the Cardinals, but it also doesn't feel like it's been compromised to try to be better now than you need to be. And that really is kind of the sweet spot. And that's particularly exciting because, again, this is kind of only year one of this. And so you realize that the Cardinals have, you know, six guys, counting Weatherholt, that are in the MLB pipeline, top 100 prospects. And there's more guys coming. And they made all these moves to get more draft picks this year. That is kind of the fun part of this, is this is right now probably as bad as it's going to get for the Cardinals. I have to say, it's not really that bad. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of a good spot to be.
Will Leach, as we say goodbye, are the Illini making it to the championship game Monday?
I don't know. I might not watch. I might not make it. Of course, no. That's all I care about in the world. I think they have a better chance against Connecticut than they would have against Duke. I think that they match up very well with Connecticut. I think particularly Connecticut has some like defensive issues in the backcourt. That's something that Illinois can very much exploit. Keaton Wagler, and I know we're closing, so I'll be as brief as I can about Keaton Wagler. It is remarkable. It is disturbing to me how much I, as frankly a middle-aged man, as much as Bernie would like to consider me hip, as a middle-aged man, how much of my emotional well-being and personal happiness is wrapped up in a kid that just turned 19. And Wagler is an absolutely incredible player and so much fun to watch, and I think has a chance to really kind of become an inner tier star over this weekend. So I think they're going to beat Connecticut. Arizona, Michigan, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But yeah, I think they can beat Connecticut. And if you promise not to quote me on this, I actually kind of think they will.
Oh, baby. All right. Well, I'm rooting for Brad Underwood. I do like him. Dan Hurley's a lunatic. So let's just, I'm hoping the Illini make it there, buddy, for your sake and for other friends of mine that I have.
And go ISU, of course.
Hey,
go
thanks.
ISU. I'm pro ISU. I'm from Matt, too. I'm pro Illinois State.
Thanks, buddy. Good to talk to you.
See you, bud.
Be safe.
Will Leach, he has got the Seeing Red podcast with Bernie. He writes baseball for MLB.com. You've seen him in the New York Times. He's got a couple of books. He is fantastic.
Now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, just a couple more minutes to go before we pass it off to the Dave Glover Show. And Bernie, I got to tell you, it has sounded to me like, just from what I'm hearing around the country, that this ABS challenge system is just a huge hit, and I am stunned to find out that you don't care one bit about it.
How about that? Does that make me a bad person?
No.
It probably does, right? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because I think it can be better. I know we don't have any time here hardly, but rather than me ramble, can I read something to you by my dear friend, the longtime baseball analyst, Joe Sheehan, because he and I are aligned on this. He wrote his newest newsletter. He said, quote, "As someone who would just as soon see all pitch calls made by the automated system, I consider the new rules a half measure. They put the onus on the players to officiate the game. They gamify a part of baseball that should be straightforward, and they still do not get enough of the calls right."
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree with that. He also points out later that this is also a money grab by MLB, because the actual process could go by so much faster, but they have to put it on the board and they take their time because they have a big sponsor logo there and they want everyone to see it. So he's all salty about it. And I find myself, like, I already believe this anyway, but after reading what he wrote, I was like, yeah, that's exactly right. You explained it better than I did.
I'd rather them just let every ball and strike be called by the system. You still need a home plate umpire. I mean, I think people are under this misconception that if you have the computer call it the whole time, that you don't need home plate umpires. You still do. And, you know, they could have it wired into their ear and they can be told, hey, that's a strike. All right, good. Strike.
Yeah,
right? I think it would just be easy and make the game quicker. But I'm fine with
too. Why are they turning this into a game show when they don't have to? If the whole point of this is to get the ball strikes calls right,
well,
this is the best way to get them right.
I think people I think they love the idea of an umpire getting publicly shown up. Like C.B. Buckner, who, he got hit in the face yesterday by a foul ball at 102 miles an hour. He's having a bad week.
Goodness.
That poor guy.
That play at first base in Milwaukee.
My God.
He needs to retire, right?
I don't know what's going on.
See, and that's the other thing, man. Like, what exactly has to happen for an umpire to lose their job? Anything?
Well, they got a union, so yeah. I mean, something serious, I assume.
Being like the worst umpire in the history of the game, that's not serious enough, right?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Bernie, we'll do it again next week. There's no Gas House Gang tomorrow because we have afternoon baseball, but we'll talk to you on Tuesday with Oliver Marmol.
See you, Ronj.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, and Chesterfield Fence and Deck. Have a great Thursday. We'll talk to you next week on the Gas House Gang, Monday at 12 on 104.1 FM KMOX.